Welcome to Draft Sickos on the No Ceilings NBA YouTube channel and podcast feed. This is the show where we discuss everybody from the biggest of names to the deepest of sleepers. I'm your host, Maxwell Baumbach. And joining me, a returning guest for this second straight week, it's Steve Feltier from the Resval Podcast. Steve, how are you doing tonight?
Great, fantastic. I'm happy to be talking about players, every last single one of these guys. I love, with the exception of probably the last guy we're going to talk about, like, I love him, but at the same time, I'm like, oh boy, I know it's a hard sell for a lot of people.
Yeah. Wanted to have you on this week because there were two mid-major performances this week that absolutely blew me away.
And they're 40 burgers, too.
Yeah, two 40 burgers and two guys that you're sort of uniquely qualified to talk about and that you've been familiar with for a long time and probably have a better grasp and understanding of the entirety of their game than a lot of people in this space. So you were the first guy I thought of when both of those guys dropped 40 individually. So I wanted to have you on here. We are going to lead off with the Sicko session. So we are doing the deep cut guys first this week because they earned it. When you drop 40 points, you get things other people don't get. We are going to lead off with Trayson Eaglestaff from North Dakota. Eaglestaff dropped 40 against Alabama this week. First off, absolutely love the high major on the road against the mid major thing. We need more of it. It's awesome. It's great. We need that to be a more common thing. We've gotten a lot of great games out of it already this year. But just an exceptional performance. He took 30 shots, 15 for 30 from the field. 7 for 12 on twos, 8 for 18 beyond the arc, ends with 40 points. Just an exceptional performance. But I wanted to lead off. Eaglestaff is a guy that you've kind of had eyes on for a long time. He's a guy I've looked at here and there. But could you just kind of give people the background on Trayson Eaglestaff and what's made him so interesting to you and made him a guy that you've kind of kept tabs on?
So all cards on the table. I begin every podcast. Yate, Steve Bellatier, Yinishe, Mai Dish, Kijini, Nishli, Biligana, Bashachin, Kinlachini, Dashache, Biligana, Nashinola. Because I'm Danan, also known as Navajo, and the whole podcast is called Resball because a lot of people don't understand that basketball is a big part of Native American culture. It's, you know, a big thing I grew up in, like my whole family on that side. My mom's side played it, every last single person. And if you go to most reservation schools, like that's the highlight. There was a Netflix documentary called Basketball or Nothing that was talked about the Chinle High School and just the fervent following that just that team has. So that's, I'm always searching for the next native basketballer. You know, shout out Lindy Waters, the third Kiowa legend, who's a res baller in the league right now. Mm-hmm. Marjon Beauchamp is another one. It's just such a big thing to us that it's always kind of bothered me that there's not more native people in the league since it is such a big part of every last single reservation, and every last single reservation has a big basketball program, you know, big rivalries and whatever. Mm-hmm. So Trayson Eaglestaff hails from the Cheyenne River Sioux, Cheyenne River Lakota Nation there in the Dakotas. And he has at North Dakota now plays shooting guard, is listed at like 6'6", 180. Really, I just looked at him last year as a shooter, and that's really what he was on the team last year. I think like BJ Omot and Tyree Iheanacho were on that team. I believe BJ went to Cal, if I remember correctly, and Tyree went to San Jose State. Mm-hmm. This might be a good test case, too, of like, I know you want to transfer up, but it doesn't work out that way because both guys really aren't doing as much as they thought they would be doing, transferring away from North Dakota, but that helped out Trayson Eaglestaff because last year he was really just like a shooter guy, come off screens. There's not a lot to tell you about within the two-point arc. Last year, his per-game two-pointers were 5 per game compared to 6.5 three-point attempts per game. Mm-hmm. Break that down into like three-point attempt rate. It was 56.6% three-point attempt rate. So you're like, okay, he's mainly a shooter. And then 56.9%, even just for somebody who's mainly a shooter, like, yeah. Skinny, you turn on the film, 6'6", 180. He's listed at 190. I don't believe the 190. They're like, whatever. But I still think there is always room for somebody that stands 6'6" and just can shoot the ball the way that Trayson did. I mean, he was the only guy on that North Dakota squad that could knock down a three-point shot, and they won about 20 games. Mm-hmm. But the more I watched him, the more I saw, like, he has more creativity. It's just, like, that's not his role that he's been given. And then this year has like absolutely blown up. The 40-point game against Alabama really put him on the map. But for the entire year, 20.1 points per game, 3.2 rebounds, which is my main beef with him. We'll get into that in a minute. Yeah. 2.1 assists and 0.8 steals. I think he's had like one block, you know, zero blocks so far. So that's also something to talk about. Shooting splits are 52.3% from two-point range, 36.9% from three-point range, and then 76.8% from the free throw line. The main thing that I like is that 7.9 three-point attempts per game, 7.9 two-point attempts per game. And so far, those two-point attempts have been 52 over 50%. Break it down even further. Look at North Dakota's schedule thus far. They have played Colorado State in the very first game. They played Notre Dame. They played UTSA twice. Like, I don't care if they're a bad team or whatever. When you play a team back-to-back, that's another, like, good film session to watch. Because, okay, you immediately get to see the counterpunch. And in the first game, Trayson dropped 14 against UTSA. In the second game, he dropped 24. And then right after that, he followed it up with the Alabama game where he dropped 40. I think this is somebody that you see the three-point shot is the main threat, but learn like, okay, I know how to be more creative with my shot and learn how to leverage that. So most people that you know, get the, oh, they're just a shooter thing. The main thing everybody always asks is when they get run off the three-point line, what do they do? Well, Trayson so far is 2 of 5 from the left, like mid-post, and 69.2%, 9 of 13 from right in the mid-range, and then 43.3% from the paint, which is 13 of 30. Like, he does have nice counters to getting run off the line with a good mid-range shot. He's learned how to use his jumper as a weapon and get run off the line and attack off the dribble. I'm not sure what the dribble off the dribble jumpers are. I'm sure you'll tell me there.
It's good. Yeah. So in the half court, he's 15 for 27 on pull-up twos. So like 55.6% on pull-up twos this year, which is
And then the runner floater seems to be like something that is legitimate too. Where it's
58.3% on those too.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's developed the counter and it's like, okay, the two things everybody's going to hate him for, myself included, I don't know if he's a rebounder like at all. That just says like this 3.2 rebounds right now is his career high. Just not somebody that gets in there and mixes it up on the glass, which as we talked about last time with Simas Lukosius, you know, it's like when you see somebody with that little rebounds, it's a big NBA skill that it seems like every NBA player did well in college. So
yeah,
definite pause. He does have more turnovers than assists, which I'm like not that. To me, I'm always like, eh, whatever. Like, KD had bad assist to turnover ratio in college. When you're the guy on a team that doesn't have a lot of other options, it's like, you know, whatever. And then defensively is where it will come into play. It's like, yeah, this is probably somebody that's picked on and like is looked at more as a backup. But when you get down to like 45 and 60, I think these are the type of guys like people should be pushing up more. Is like, let's find somebody that had a skill we know they can rely on and then develop counters to it to where they're not just specifically one thing on offense or one thing on defense. They have other facets that they've developed.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think Eagle Staff is like an interesting, like, let's see where this is a year from now thing. So I think what I love about Eagle Staff was I've been like some sort of leery of him as like a margins prospect. So he's a guy that I've looked at for No Stone each of the last 3 years and I've never decided to cover him for the series. So he's a guy that's like, I've been aware of because the counting numbers are always there in the Summit League, which is not like a bargain bin conference. Like they're like, I mean, like they're, like you said, like BJ Omont, like high major transfer out, Grant Nelson, high major transfer out, Trenton Master a few years ago was like a summer league guy. Like there's talent that comes out of this league. Max A. Smith was there and like he's shooting 15 threes a game in the G League this year. Like there's talent in the Summit League. Every year it just felt like, okay, I know this guy can score and shoot, but like I need more. What captivated me so much about this game was how good the scoring performance was. And I think we need to just contextualize a little bit the shot. So if you get his career 3-point percentage, it's 37.7%. You may pick, okay, well, that's fine. He's taking for his career almost 14 threes per 100 possessions, which is like Sam Hauser, Corey Kispert level, like volume. Like that is bomber volume. That is the only amount of threes that you take if you are an elite shooter. So to have like an above average percentage on that type of volume, the guy is a shooter. He's a real deal shooter. I was just impressed by the overall like bucket getting in this game against Alabama. Alabama was not, this was it was a competitive game. So this was like pretty down to the wire. I think Alabama only won by 7, but it was competitive with like a few minutes to go. The other thing to really keep in mind is like Alabama was like scheming against him. This wasn't a case of like, hey, we're going to try and like make him beat us or anything like that. This was, okay, let's throw Jaren Stevenson at him. Let's throw Darian Reed at him. Let's throw this guy. Like they were trying to put every different type of defender on Trayson Eaglestaff to shut him down. And they couldn't do it. Touch is unreal. Touch is unreal. Like floater range, mid range. Like I generally am skeptical of guys that like post high percentages in those areas because they can be higher variant shots, but like he's really good at those. I love his pace. I love his kind of like shiftiness and herky jerky movement patterns and the speed changes. His pull up is unreal, like really quick release on the pull up, very good footwork on his pull up, like so balanced on his pull-up shot in a way that you don't normally see too often, as far as just like making sure he's got his feet under himself and he's super balanced, even if he was like dribbling hard into the move. Absolutely love that. Was really blown away by it. Had some nice like simple passes, like, oh, I got two on a ball out of a ball screen, here we go, like here's the coverage, here's the easy pass, there it is, like here comes the help, I'm passing to the open guy. Simple stuff. I didn't think he was capable of being that type of scorer, and I think it's clear now that that's what he is. And yeah, to your point, like anytime a guy is shooting that well, like it's always worth noting he's scoring 36 points per 100 possessions and he's doing it like pretty efficiently around 57 true shooting. 30.2 usage rate, which like I love high usage guys. Like I love guys where it's like, I know that you can take on a lot and we can scale this back and figure out the rest later. Like we talked about with Michael Rattay last week. My concerns are still everything else. Like you mentioned, the rebounding is still not there. Like the defensive playmaking metrics were good as a freshman, like 2.4 steals, 1.4 blocks. And they've been kind of down every year. And I know that like part of that's going to be role, but like, I just don't think he moves well at all defensively. Like everything's a little bit slow. He's just kind of upright when he guards the ball, doesn't slide his feet that well. He's just not a natural mover on that end of the floor. Doesn't appear to be at this stage. Maybe if I went back into the freshman year tape, I'd feel differently when those numbers were better. And then even like the passing, like it's a good assist rate. It's not a great one. Negative assist turnover is always a red flag. Generally, I will say that the guys who make it with a negative ATO are guys that are like shooter dudes. It's your Buddy Hields, your Ochai Agbaji, even like Cam Thomas, Malik Beasley, Isaiah Joe. Like those are the guys that didn't have great assist turnover ratios, are generally like this type of guy. I just think given what the athletic tools are, like he's got to find some other way. And I don't know if that's like really sharp passing. I don't know if it's like, he's got to maximize his fitness regardless, but like, I'm just trying to figure out what the best path for him is going to be. Or he's got to shoot like a Kobe Brea type of percentage. Like he's got to just, there's got to be some little thing that changes for me to like get there with him as like a legit NBA guy. But I think if he stays, he's probably getting a Portsmouth invite next year.
Yeah, for sure. I think all of it for me boils down to like physicality and body. If he looked more like an NBA player than the guy at LA Fitness who just like, everybody, no, sorry, Trayson, but he's a skinny dude, right? He looks like a hooper for sure, but he doesn't look like an NBA player. And then the rebounding and the defense, like it all adds up to that of like, I just don't think he's physical enough for like serious NBA consideration because the shooters don't end up working out. Even someone like Troy Daniels, who did have quite a good NBA career, and in the G League too, like the main reason he didn't get as much playing time as he probably could have is because he was just never physical. And again, he was the peak of the dude that just shoots. So yeah, I think it comes down to that. But I mean, in terms of like the guy that just shoots, to further contextualize the shooting last year on the North Dakota squad, can you guess Who was the next best shooter on that North Dakota squad? Do you have any
idea? I would guess it was probably Omot, and I would guess it was probably like still a low percentage. Because I feel like with Omot, the thing that always was the deal breaker for me was just like his efficiency was never there.
So BJ Omot took 5.9 threes per game. He shot 28.2%. After that was Tyree Iheanacho, who took 5 3-point attempts per game, shot 28.8%. Then we have Sane Sartsidze, who took 3.4 3-point attempts per game, shot 32.4%. I'm not really counting Amar Kulajovic. He took 0.7 threes per game.
Yeah, sure,
5.5%. Eli King took 2.6 3-point attempts per game and shot 35.4%, making him the second best shooter in the main rotation. There were some other guys that took threes, but I mean, they took under 1.5, and even they shot 31% or less. Mm-hmm. So to say he's doing all the shooting is not hyperbole.
No. Yeah, I kind of hope, and what I said earlier, like if he stays in North Dakota, like I think that is the path for him. Like I think there's a lot of guys where it's like, oh, I'd like to see this transfer up. Like I think he's a guy where it's like, what I need you to show me, I kind of need you to show me it there. Like I need to see you playing defense and doing all those things in a high usage role for me to buy it, as opposed to like, I think if we're just talking like what is the path to the NBA, I think the idea of like him doing the Houston Millett and like transferring to a school where he's like number 12 on the depth chart is like not going to be the way. If that's what he wants, and like everyone's wants and desires can be different, there's different financial realities, like all that jazz. But I think if we're just talking like if the game is just to get him to the NBA, I'd like to see him stay put. A guy who I think is a lot further on to NBA radars is Donovan Dent in New Mexico, who like I kind of feel bad for, and we'll get to that in a second. He's a 6'2 guard at New Mexico, having another fantastic season, 19.6 points per game, 7.3 assists per game to only 2.7 turnovers. What I think Donovan Dent is sort of most known for is like his overall just shiftiness in passing. Like he's just one of those guys who, despite being rail thin, is a walking paint touch who just sneaks his way into the paint time and time again, and then is a great decision maker and processor of the game from there, can find anybody, can whip creative passes through tight windows. Like that is all there. And he's really athletic. So his defensive playmaking numbers, because that quickness, that speed, that mental processing have always been really good. Dropped a 40 burger on VCU this week. And VCU isn't just like a good mid-major team. This is a good mid-major team with a lot of guard talent between Max Shulga, between Philip Russell, between Zeb Jackson. Like, I don't know that you could name a better mid-major guard like trio than those three dudes. And like, Philip Russell, like he's undersized or whatever, but like between Shulga, who's like a big bulky guy, and like Zeb Jackson, who's like a really smart player, and then even like a Bama Seal, who's like a bigger guy who has good defensive playmaking metrics, like there's a lot of different things that they were able to throw at him. And Donovan Dent still dropped 40. And I thought what was most interesting about this game, we'll get to that in a second. Real quick, because you're a New Mexico guy. What has been your take on Donovan Dent sort of throughout the last couple of years, and then anything unique from the VCU game?
Yeah, again, you know, cards on the table. I'm from Albuquerque. That's where I grew up. I'm a Lobo. Like, if you cut me inside, I know I'm wearing my Michigan stuff today, but I bleed cherry and silver. I don't bleed maize and blue. I'm sorry. You know, it's just Albuquerque's in my blood. I went there. That's where I got my undergrad. And so I always pause. I always have to pause myself when talking about Lobos, as I definitely want to sell them higher than they are. Shout out to Richard Stamen, Mavs draft. He's been on Donovan Dent since his freshman year.
Yeah.
And he and I are probably the only two people who really like rode the Donovan Dent train since day one.
Mm-hmm.
The case to me has always been very easy. Every time I've seen him from the moment he stepped on the court, I'm like, this is Ish Smith, like the new version of Ish Smith. Because Ish played in the league for like 50 years, it seems. He played on every squad. Because every squad needed him, because he was lightning quick. He was a better passer than like even 90% of NBA players.
Yep.
And he could get into the paint. I'm going to remember, I'm a Piston fan. I saw probably the absolute best version of Ish. And he even shot some threes when he was here in Detroit. And every coach that had him, like, just sang his praises of like, man, this is a guy that knows what to do, tries very hard on defense, doesn't get cooked. And like every second unit he was ever a part of knew what to do basically because of him and just his smarts. And that's what Donovan brings to the table is like, yeah, he knows how to get in the paint and use penetration, like somewhat of an old school point guard where it's like, I have to get inside. And then once defenses collapse and panic, then that's when I play make for other dudes, but he can score. Oh my gosh, though. I love you, Donovan, but why do you never shoot threes?
Yeah.
So I don't get it. I don't get it. He was teammates with Jalen House and Jamal Mashburn, which is all they did was shoot threes.
Yeah.
Like they were just firing away. I don't know why he didn't take anything away from him. Kudos to him for being able to play his game and not like trying to like jury rig a jumper in there. But
yeah, again,
it's the weird. Only reason I think we're still talking about him as like, oh, maybe he, because that's where it's going to come down to, right? It's like, oh, maybe he's an NBA guy. Maybe he's like on pick. He doesn't have a three-point. I don't care what the percentages are. When you consistently take under 2 threes per game in today's basketball world, it ain't going to cut it, man.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. So I would say the devil's advocate version is like I'm a guy who missed on AJ Mitchell. Like I'll wear that one. The AJ Mitchell conundrum of like, maybe it's because he doesn't need to, like, maybe it's just because he gets where he wants on the floor. And like, I was talking to a team scout, like this is years ago now, about a player. And I was like, well, do you think he's going to be able to do this in the league? About a different thing. And he's like, well, yeah, but if he doesn't, he's just not going to play. And the guy is not stupid. So we think he's going to do it. And like, I feel like when I'm like, man, I really should have thought that through with AJ Mitchell. Like, oh yeah. Like, he's a really smart player, of course. If it's like, well, you're gonna have to shoot threes or get to the rim, he's like, yeah, well, then I'll shoot the occasional three. That's fine. And like, his volume in the NBA hasn't been super high from three, but it's also just like, oh yeah, he's like really smart, just knows how to play basketball, and like can get the shots that he wants and doesn't need to. I wonder with Dent how much of it is like, I get to the rim when I want, so why am I going to shoot a three? And then if you tell him he has to, maybe he can. The issue is the 3-point volume is like extraordinarily low. It's like when you're talking like under 2 attempts per game. That's under 2.5 per 100 possessions, because this is a team that plays pretty fast because they have Donovan Dent, who is very fast. There are like 6 guys in the last several years that shot like under 5 threes per game that have made it. And like some of them are like, it's Shea. Like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander like rarely took threes in college. De'Aaron Fox, like Gary Payton II, like a lot of them are quick athletic dudes. They were the under 5 threes per 100 type of guys. I'm wondering for Dent if that's all it is. If it's just, I get there when I want. The inverse to that is like, he's not a good free throw shooter. He is a sub 70% free throw.
He gets there a lot, career. Though, like over 50% free throw attempt rate, like every year.
Yeah, that was the one thing I really wanted to give him kudos for. In this game in particular, was he took 10 free throws. And I thought the level of physicality he operated with against guys that would be a little harder to be physical with for a lot of guards, I thought really stood out. 10 for 11 from the charity stripe in the VCU game. I don't quite know what to make the shot. And I've long been agnostic of free throw percentage as an indicator, except for with bigs. And the reason it's better for bigs is because sometimes bigs just don't shoot threes. Donovan Dent is like kind of not shooting threes. So maybe it is an indicator there, and the indicator wouldn't be great. So I'm really perplexed by the lack of 3-point shooting. And I have no idea how much to penalize him for it, because everything else outside of like physical girth, I guess, would be there. Dent is also very thin. He's a really skinny dude. If he was like one of those bulky, like Fred VanVleet, like body type guys, and still moved like this, maybe it would be different. But it's the overall size, like not just height. It's the fact that he is thin and short, and I don't know if he can shoot. It's like you just hear those three things in combination. It's really terrifying. Even if he is super smart, even if he is a great passer, even if he's got a wicked handle, even if the defense is really great, I am so nervous about whenever the time comes and this guy decides to come out, where I'm going to end up putting this guy, unless he starts shooting threes, because it is a perplexing game that he plays, but it's a very good one.
Skinny strong is how I would, he's like, he's KCP type strong, where you're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever that guy. And then you try him, you're like, oh, that guy does a lot of squats and like lower body stuff, you know, and has good core strength. They're like, mm-hmm. Kate is probably the best example. Not that Kate is skinny strong, but I can't tell you how many times this season I've seen dudes bounce off him, like Jairus Walker, or mm-hmm. I forget who in the Heat game, somebody tried him, like one of the bigger power forwards. And like, I think it might've been Haywood Highsmith. They bounced.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, I feel like that happened with Donovan quite a bit. Another name to think here, though, is TJ McConnell.
Like, yeah, that's a great one. Yeah.
Right. Everything we just said, and even things I don't like, I'm like, that didn't matter for TJ because, you know, what you just said, he can get there. Sure, his 3-point percentage got better at times, but it just hasn't been fantastic. And I mean, seeing him play the Pistons every year, like, he kills us. He murders that second unit just because of how well he can penetrate and playmake for others. And another selling point with Donovan is we played UCLA, we played St. John's. By the way, if y'all haven't watched these St. John's versus New Mexico games, it's must-see TV. It's Patino versus Patino. And, you know, God forbid Richard ever goes somewhere else to coach. But anytime you see Rick and the kid coaching against each other, it's fun. Lobos have played Arizona State. They played USC. They've played New Mexico State, who, if you watch college basketball, you always know NMSU is ridiculously hard. And VCU. So, again,
like, real team schedule. Yeah, and it's worth noting, too, that, like, USC was another team that he, like, shredded up. That was the game that they won. It was 17-6-11 for Dent in that game. Like,
I wouldn't be surprised if the Arizona boss State is, like, on the phone with him or, like, in the tunnel being like, hey, dude, like, come on down here. Like, that's, like, the kind of Eric Musselman that he should seem like he wants his eye on, God forbid. But, yeah, I don't know when that started either. Like, San Diego State and us kind of did that a while back. It's like, forget it. We're not going to play cookie-cutter schedule at the beginning of the season. And it's only helped things like this with Donovan Dent. I'm pretty bullish on him just because when you get to the end of the second round, like, how many guys can you ever argue for that are, like, legitimate point guards that you don't have any questions on in defense, that you know, like, know your playbook inside and out? And really it just comes down to the, like, I need him to shoot more threes.
I like the McConnell comp a lot. I genuinely think that kind of recontextualizes how I've been thinking about him. That's a really good one. I think he's a fascinating player. And, like, to your point, like, it would be different too if, like, one of those games against the high major was, like, a disaster. Like, if he had one game where it was like, this was way too much for him, whatever, and it's like, that has not been the case. It just hasn't
happened. Yeah, the USC one was particularly eye-opening for me because I was like, dang, is he the best athlete out here right now? Because these guys are having problems with him.
Yeah. So really strong stuff from Donovan Dent. Great start to the year. We are going to take a quick break. And then we just mentioned San Diego State. We talked about San Diego State a little bit last week. We're going to do it again this week, but this time we're talking about Miles Bird. So stick with us. We will be back on the other side of the break. All right. So by the time this is up, my article on Miles Bird should be up on NoCeilingsNBA.com. It's titled Miles Bird is the Monster in Waiting. So the inspiration for the title of this episode was my daughter is, like, a super active kid. Like, she's like a park every day kid when the weather is good. And now, unfortunately, it's winter and the sun goes down at, like, 4 o'clock. And that's not really an option anymore with two working parents and getting home and it's already dark outside. She loves scary stuff, like, loves it. Around, like, Halloween, she was just, like, all about
that's awesome.
Ghosts and monsters and all this stuff. So she's three, and she came up with this game that's her favorite game to play called Monster, where she makes us turn off all the lights in the house and, like, do jump scare tactics to her. Like, that's what she wants to play. Usually, though, she wants my wife to be the monster. And, like, I am, like, not into scary stuff. So, like, at five different times every night we play Monster. I was playing Monster before we did this podcast. My wife will, like, hide somewhere in the house and jump scare us, and I'll be terrified. And, like, it's just this sense of knowing that, like, I'm going to go somewhere, something bad's going to happen to me, something's going to jump out, and I'm not going to like it. And even though I know it's my wife, nothing said it's going to happen, it's still just, I hate that lingering anticipation of, like, I know it's coming, I know I can't do anything about it, and it's going to happen. And I feel like that's what Miles Bird does to other teams, where it's just like, when he's on the floor defensively, it's going to happen. Something's going to happen. It might be a block from the weak side. It might be, uh-oh, I threw an entry pass, and he read it from the strong side corner and came over and intercepted that. It could be, uh-oh, I've got to deal with him at the point of attack, and I thought I had the ball in a three-point stance out of his reach, but he just poked in and took it away anyway. This guy makes plays on defense all the time, and it's an inevitability. His defensive playmaking metrics are bonkers. 3.1 steal rate, 5 block rate, DBPM of 5.3. Like, each one of those individually is elite. This is not the case of like, oh, wow, like, he's really good at getting steals for a wing. He's really good at passing lanes. Oh, he's a really good shot blocker for a wing. He's really productive for a wing. It's all of it. The entire defensive picture is outstanding in terms of playmaking. It's really rare. It's really rare for a guy to be checking all three of those boxes at 6'7". The instincts and the anticipation are just really off the charts. And I think anytime you have a guy that's 6'7" like that and is not he's not a zero on offense either, you got to start talking about him. Like Alex Fudge got a two-way, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where it's like Alex Fudge had nothing on offense and still got a two-way out of the gate because people are like, wow, he does a lot on defense. With Miles Bird, the skill level is like outrageous compared to Alex Fudge. I think Miles Bird is a first round guy. We're going to get to that in a little bit just to go in more depth, but the defensive stuff is off the charts. And that's the main reason why I wanted to write about him. But what have been your sort of early impressions of Miles Bird?
Yeah. I feel like every year San Diego State has this guy, like Jaden Ledee was that last year where they just kind of do everything on the court and you just can't help but marvel. And by the end of the draft cycle, even if you're like with Jaden, it was just like, I don't know about the 3-point shot. Like, I don't know if he is going to be a defender down low, but you couldn't deny the skill level and everything that he's able to do and carry the team. I feel like we're going down that same route with Miles Bird. The shooting, it looked like it was going to kind of go down, but then it came back up and it just seems like, I feel like that's also like the monster in waiting. It's like he's one of those shooters that he could go like 0 for 5 and then magically hits like 2 at the end that seals it and you know, gets the game for San Diego State. And it's just like, we can't do this. So I believe I have him. I mean, if I don't have him in the first round, I'm probably going to have him on the first round, the first big board in 6'7"-ish. But another guy that I would just put in that like role player supreme, good rebounder. Again, like you just said, so active on defense, blocks and steals. Mm-hmm. He's just going to do something and make defensive plays. And like, that is his, like, I imagine he like stays up at night, like in cold sweats, thinking about what he's going to do to the other squad on defense. Like, it just seems like his MO. And then all he needs to do is shoot. And I think he gets run off the line enough. His numbers at the rim aren't so great. I mean, if you want to like, I feel like he's a player where people are going to nitpick, like he's 41.2% at the rim, but he's 63.6% in the paint right now, only 11 shots. But I do feel like he does have at least a runner floater to counter, you know, getting run off the line. But I just don't think that's going to be his calling card. He's not as tall as Cam Johnson, but it's like somewhere between a Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith. I feel like I put those comps on a lot of guys, but I feel like those types of guys are becoming more and more prevalent. And that archetype is there to where it's like, yeah, we just want to keep trying to invest in guys that can do this. But with Miles, I feel like that's still not quite it, because it's like, okay, who is this disruptive on defense that we can also just be like, take as many threes as you want. Maybe something like a Trey Murphy, but again, Trey Murphy's one of one, great athlete.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure, but I mean, it just, again, all Miles needs to do is continue to be the, you know, bananas and out of his mind defensive player. And then a dude that does not have a conscience taking 3-pointers because he's going to make enough of them. Like, what else do you want out of this guy?
Yeah. Can I throw like a forbidden comp at you? Like one where it's like, the perception of these two is so different coming out, but they actually profile like really similarly in terms of their college production. And I believe Miles is quite a bit older. But if you look at the stats, and I think if you also just like consider the plug and play nature of their games, I think there's a lot of Devin Vassell here.
Yeah. I remember Devin having a lot of like defensive numbers of, but it's odd because he just hasn't turned into that.
Anyway. So
I think part of what it is like, if you remember back then, yeah, that absolutely makes a ton of sense. But the player he is now is like so different from that. It's,
yes.
So offensive only pretty much.
Yeah. I think he's the Devin Vassell that we imagined in terms of like, it's going to be defensively tilted. It's going to be sort of catch and shoot oriented. I think the shot diet is better with Bird, where it's a lot more threes and a lot less like midi pull up, like kind of stuff. If I'm remembering the Vassell tape well. I think with Bird, it's just like, this is a guy you can put on any team. And like, even if it's like a little like Josh Green ish or something along those lines, like that's another role I could kind of see him filling. Vince Williams Jr., the role that he was playing with the Grizzlies when things were kind of clicking for him. Like, these are guys where like the gears turn. And I kind of think like, man, like I could see him doing that role, or being that type of player. I think offensively it's a really interesting conversation. If the floor falls out, I definitely think that's where it's going to happen. The shot historically has been not great on high volume. Like, freshman year only plays 4 games. Last year, the volume is there, but the shots don't go in. But he's been a great free throw shooter both the last 2 years, over 90% at the charity stripe this year. 38.8% from 3 on 11 attempts per game. So good results on good volume. The shot does like look a little funky to me. Like, there's just some weird like wrist flicky kind of stuff at the top. But the bottom line is he's super confident in it. And he's really comfortable off of movement. Like, when it's a transition three, if it comes off a handoff, like, his shot prep on it is fine. He's undaunted in the face of a closeout, which is something I really like. Like, he's one of those guys who does well on his contested threes, because the release is high enough and it's just sort of a stable enough consistent shot that he doesn't feel the need to alter it or over adjust if someone's coming at him. I think the chase off the line question is real if we're talking about like higher end outcomes. He's just not he doesn't have a good first step is the biggest thing. And he's not very strong either. Like, he is really wiry. So it's not like he's going to get to the rim with power by controlling his line, and he's not going to get there with a blazing first step. So the times when he does get to the rim, it's rare. He rarely pressures the rim. Only 13.5% of his half-court shots are at the rim. It's like a very counter-oriented thing where it's like, I came off a handoff, a guy caught up to me, I did a crossover, I pretended like I was going to use the screen, and then I rejected it, and then I got there, and I slid through traffic, and I got a shot. And it's a lot. It's a lot that goes into him getting those rim attempts. I love that he has the polish to get there. Like, I love that there is, like, the mental fluidity, the processing, the counter game to get there. Sometimes I like a guy that can just catch the ball and sprint and get to the rim and dunk it. And like, Bird is an above the rim guy when it's like transition, but in the half court, like, the physicality and the speed worries me a little bit. So like, that's like the big ceiling inhibitor for me, is like, I just don't think he's a guy that can like get to the rim in 2 steps when chased off the line. And that worries me. Maybe he gets there, maybe because like, the freshman year, there was like the injury thing, or he didn't play much or whatever. Like, maybe he gets stronger and builds up his legs and can get more explosion out of his first step. But I would say that's the biggest hang up for me. Passing wise, I like his vision. I think he's actually quite creative, like very understated by his assist rate, but the assist to turnover is really good. Had one of my favorite passes of the season on a behind the back to Farrell Compton in their game against Cal Baptist. I really like the decision-making. I really like the shot. I really like the defense. And I think that is enough for him to be a guy who plays in a rotation in the NBA. I think, like, is he a guy that you get super excited about comes down to like, well maybe not, just because of the overall like interior finishing, athleticism, and strength.
Yeah. The only reason I bring up the Cam Johnson comp is I feel like the athletic stuff is the same type of thing. I believe Cam had injury stuff coming out of college as well. I think there's a big difference between Cam as a shooter. Like, Cam, you would have to be a control freak or out of your mind to not let that guy just shoot when he wants to shoot. Whereas with Miles, I do think you would be more sane to be like, let's limit some of these. So I don't think he's quite that level of shooter. But it always boils down to me with the prospects like this that are so active on defense and then that just have one elite skill for their position, like centers that finish at a high rate and block a ton of shots. It's like, I don't know what team wouldn't want this guy. Like, do 30 teams need a guy like this? Absolutely. So it just depends on where you get it. It's not, you're not bargaining, you're not haggling for the product, you're haggling for price at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm really pleased with what I've seen out of him. I think he's like a legit guy. I just don't think you see too many guys that shoot that well, that offer that much on defense. And I ultimately think, like, maybe don't go too far with the details if you're just looking for a guy who can come in and do a few things well. So really high on Miles Byrd, excited to see where he goes the rest of the year. We're going to talk Jaden Quaintance on the other side of the break, who I am fascinated to dive into. He's not draft eligible until next year, but already just a guy that I am mesmerized by. He's been playing at Arizona State this year. So stick with us. We will be right back. All right, we were talking about Jaden Quaintance at Arizona State. Was sort of like a last second reclass, if I'm not mistaken, like doing the Imani Bates like two and done scenario of too young for the draft this year, will be in it next year. Really interesting player. So in under 30 minutes per game for Arizona State, 9.4 points, 8.3 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.6 turnovers. 3.5 blocks, 1.5 steals. He's 6'9", 225, wiry freshman who is all over the place on defense. He is also shooting 50% from the free throw line and 18.2% from three on low volume. What do we make of Jaden Quaintance and what he's done at Arizona State this season?
Let me get this out of the way. Boo, ASU. I work for the University of Arizona, so I'm contractually obligated to boo anybody from Tempe.
Yeah,
that's out of the way. Quaintance, mm-hmm. though, like, man, this is the kind of guy that I absolutely love just because I'm so defensive-minded. I mean, Ben Wallace is my favorite player ever. Mm-hmm. So
I was obsessed with Ben Wallace when I was a kid. And, like, growing up in Chicagoland, the Bulls signed him, and I was like, here we go, baby. And then it was over. It was nothing good after that. But
I mean, this is a player after Ben Wallace's own heart, definitely. Mm-hmm. Like, just looks to suffocate the paint, looks to erase every shot. And they're not, like, chase blocks either. That's the thing.
Ooh.
And with how young he is, he started every last single game for the Sun Devils, which is incredibly impressive to me as well, too. I honestly didn't think this team was going to be that great just because they're relying so much on Joseph Sanon, which another guy that needs to be talked about more. Really good bucket getter. And then Quaintance. But, man, both guys have just shown that they are ready and they should be in consideration. But, oh, my gosh. I absolutely hate Quaintance on offense. I don't know what he does on offense. I mean, if you look at his shot chart, the only area he has any positiveness is at the rim, 34-48. So at least he's finishing very well, 70.8% at the rim. But, I mean, everywhere else, he's ice cold.
Yeah, I think ultimately I still love the bet on him just because, like, he is so truly special as a defender that, like, I don't know, like a 12.2 block rate for any freshman is stellar, but especially one who's like not anchoring the defense. Like, it's all just coming sort of within the flow of the game, so to speak. And like high steal rate, good decision maker, like positive assist to turnover ratio, which I always worry about. Like, anytime a guy reclasses, I'm just like, oh boy. Or if a guy's just like really young for the class, I'm like, I hope you are prepared for the speed of the game, which you are about to play. He is, like, mentally, I think he's there. Yeah, the offense is really bizarre as a whole. And I just want to, again, like, emphasize, like, this is a really young player. Cannot stress enough how special the defense is. 6.4 DPPM. Like, I was watching the Arizona State game earlier in the year because, like, I thought they had, like, a number of interesting, like, Portsmouth-y kind of guys. Like, I thought BJ Freeman was the guy that was going to be in that mix. Bashir Jihad is the guy who, like, I think probably gets that invite if I had to guess, but who knows? Like, there's going to be 700 Portsmouth eligible guys that are worthwhile this year because it's the old man double draft this year between the COVID eligible seniors and the regular eligible seniors. So we'll see. I was like, okay, yeah, like Justin Sinan, like I'll take notes on him, like when he's in the game. And I was trying to, like, not take notes on Quaintance. Like, I was trying to be like, all right, I got to focus on these, like, Portsmouth guys for, like, when the time comes, because a couple of them might be in that mix, and then I'll have to write the big Portsmouth article and get words in on them. And, like, I just couldn't take my eyes off of Quaintance. Like, he just kept making too many things happen, and it's like, oh, he got another offensive rebound. Oh, he blocked another shot. Like, oh, he was a really good rim to turn on that play. Like, every single trip down the court, it felt like he was doing something that was catching my eye. I wonder what the offensive path is. Like, I wonder if it's like a, because there is some nascent feel, could it turn into like a Jonathan Mogbo-y thing where it's like, maybe he's like mega Mogbo and can like the defensive production scales better because he is so much bigger and there is the length and there is like the rebounding and stuff. And then like, maybe he can pass, but like, I just think his overall coordination isn't that good. Like there are times where he'll be running a DHO where like he'll have to put it on the deck to like get to the basket. And like with the ball in his hands, he just feels like so much less natural of an athlete that I don't even know like if he can do that. And I'm not a fan of the whole like, oh, we just play him next to a stretch five. It's like there's so few like real stretch fives that argument always makes me nervous. I think he's the guy you ultimately just take super high because like his brain is good, the tools are good, and the defensive production is fantastic. So like you bet on that. But yeah, I would not be too far away from you as far as like, man, this offense is not great.
As much as we praise him on defense, like that's as the negative aspect of that is on offense for me. I mean, the last two games saved his percentages. In the first nine games, Quayton's had a 49.1% true shooting.
Yeah.
That's brutal. It's 52.5% now. But if you're somebody who just takes shots at the rim and your true shooting percentage isn't 60%, to me, that's always a negative of like,
yeah,
man, you're wasting so much. And the free throw percentage really got rescued the last two games where he went 3 of 4 from the line in both games. Because before that, he was shooting 42.3% from the free throw line. I mean, Clint Capella, Nick Claxton, these are guys I think he should study.
Sure.
Those is like absolutely what you have to do. I do think there's some like DHO stuff that could be more unlocked. I don't know that old Bobby Hurley here is going to like help him do that stuff. It's not exactly like that's
what they're not his style. Yeah.
ASU, but like you could do that. The name to me though, when I was like, ugh, I don't want to talk about him, but the name that sold me on him, because when I was thinking about it, I was like, this is like Ryan Dunn. And Ryan Dunn
okay, was yeah.
selling like as a small forward. As a yeah. freshman, but this time it's like, no, let's get out.
And there's like 5 years of age difference too. Is the other thing where it's like Dunn was like an old sophomore, and it's like with Queens, it's like we are just scratching the surface.
Yeah, and we don't have to change position. We really just have to work on him finishing at a high clip and getting that free throw percentage up. Those are the only two things you legitimately have to work at, as well as like little things on defense of getting better, like sliding your feet and switching, and all those other things. Because yeah, this is somebody that like. Easily could profile as like a Clint Capella type of guy that absolutely is worth a top 10 pick.
Oh yeah,
definitely, because the defensive numbers are bananas. And there's a reason I bring up Ben Wallace in the beginning is because he might be a player like that where it's like he's so good on defense, like this other offensive stuff might not even really matter.
And I do wonder too if the roster construction is a little different next year, if that helps him, where like Austin Mason is like their only sort of like real point guard on the team, where it's like Adam Miller does some de facto point guard stuff. BJ Freeman is like a good passer for a guy who is 6'6", like Bashir Jihad and like Justin Sinan are like not guys I like making decisions with the ball in their hands. Like, I do wonder if he's in a position where he's like a little bit more spoon fed too, if that would make a difference. And then maybe we're looking at him and it's like, oh, well, he's like 60% from the field and like whatever. And then,
yeah, it's why I bring up Ryan Dunn again, because it's like Ryan Dunn had to be like number two, number one some nights. And then he gets to NBA. It's like everybody's like, oh, look, he can shoot really well when KD is right next to him.
Yeah. So I do wonder if like that, if there's gonna for sure be changes in the roster construction, just because a lot of these guys are gonna graduate. I'm really intrigued to see how that roster takes shape around him next year, and then what he's able to do based off of that. How do you feel about like the shot projection? I'm always like so baffled by these guys who come into college so young, because it's like we have so few examples, and those examples are so like boom or bust that it's hard to know like. I don't know. To me, it's like G.G. Jackson like had some good games in the NBA during his rookie season after like being horribly inefficient in college. But like just the wiring of G.G. and Quaintance is like so diametrically opposed to one another. I just don't know. It looks like a really flat ball to me is like the biggest thing I just come away with, is it just looks like a hard flat ball. And I think you hope that, like, because everything else is good, maybe you just hyper focus on that this offseason and we could see a pretty big shooting leap, because guys tend to have those when they're young, and he is really young.
Yeah, I'm just always somebody that, like, if the shot is not there, then just evaluate them as if they're never going to shoot threes.
Yeah.
Like, at that point, okay, what else did they do well with Ryan Dunn? There's another reason why I bring up Ryan Dunn. To me, I'm like, Ryan Dunn doesn't need to shoot to be a really successful NBA player, because he could be this switch power forward guy next to a center who's more paint-oriented, or like Miles Bird. I thought Indiana might have been Ryan Dunn's best landing spot, because Miles Turner, like, seems like he doesn't care as much on defense anymore. And then if you just stick this guy next to him who can guard, you know, Jason Tatum, or who can guard, you know, Luka Doncic and those type of guys, that's all he really needs to do. And then he's more of the finisher, and you have like a Miles Turner who still spaces the floor and stuff out next to him. I feel like it's kind of that way with Jaden Quaintance too, where it's like, if he's playing the 5-2, it's more of a thing to where you're like, we don't really have to account for the shot. And I think too, I don't know if this is a hot take or whatever, but I think so many guys, especially centers nowadays, waste development time on trying to get a jump shot that it's to the detriment of the rest of their game. Again, I'm a Piston fan. Andre Drummond, you would not believe how many off seasons we saw Dre shooting threes. Who was it? Knicks, Mitchell Robinson. Remember we saw those, like,
yeah.
between the legs and like shooting threes. And it's just like, you don't need to develop that in order to be great. And if you're already stellar at these things, like, stick to that and make them even better. You don't need a jumper to be successful in the NBA for Jaden Quaintance.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like his game. I've been, like I said, I've been like trying to not pay attention to him. And then every time I turn on Arizona State, I'm like, oh, I like this guy. He's like my favorite guy on the floor. So
same.
Yeah,
I might not let me back at work by saying that, but whatever.
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do. Well, I appreciate you coming back on the pod. Where can people find you?
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I mean, Draft Sickles is always my go-to show as well. It's who I am, and appreciate all the work you and Steven and everybody else that's on this show do. So you can find me at Resball Pod. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Instagram. I'm on YouTube occasionally. You search Resball Pod wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, on YouTube podcasts as well. So yeah, thank you so much for having me again. Always happy to be on the show anytime you want.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was glad to be able to get you back on so quickly. I threw it at you like kind of last second this week too, so I appreciate you making it happen. Make sure you subscribe to No Ceilings NBA on your podcast feed, the YouTube channel as well, and our Substack, NoCeilingsNBA.com. No Ceilings Plus, $8 a month, gets you a bonus section to my column every week, as well as bonus content, live scouting notes, intel, and more. So make sure you're plugged in over there. That'll do it. The pod, this podcast in particular, is going to be a little bit in flux for a while. Steven is getting back, so we should have Steven back in the mix fully soon. But next week, I'm traveling, and I will be in a very remote area where internet is sparse, so I do not know what if there will be a show next week or not. There will be a column from me for sure, but next week, I don't know if there's going to be a podcast. So just keep that in mind. So if I am not here next week, I hope everyone enjoys their holiday season, has a good one. We will see you all next time.
Read the articles, people. Remember
that's right. Read the articles.